Veritex Community Bank Studios. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, H-Town? Hey!
How we doing?
From the Houston Astros, Kyle Tucker. Justin Verlander. And Framber Valdez.
He's Blank. I'm Brad. I'm Brendan behind the glass. Astros booed in the City of Angels last night. Dodger Stadium, the All-Star game. The Astros just dominated the All-Star game, by the way. At least Framber did. Got the victory.
Well, the manager, too, got a victory.
I tell you what, that was some of the finest managing I've ever seen. The fact that Dusty Baker can collect a team full of stars, they're all stars, that he can collect all of them and win is amazing. Like, to me, it's another feather in the cap of the Hall of Fame resume of Dusty Baker.
I was just looking at your face trying to see if your tongue was firmly planted in your cheek when you said that. Because, you know,
it'd be hard to talk that way.
It is Dusty. Look, I think that Dusty had a lot of fun being able to take a guy out after getting two out so he could get another guy to get one out, because that's, you know, he's always been known as a guy, the way he meddles and handles his pitching staff. But he had some fun with it. The booing was interesting to me because I don't get it, but I get it in terms of the naive Dodger fans that associate players that weren't even on the 17 team and anything that, where there's an association with the Astros, they're going to do that. From a Dusty perspective, you won a World Series as a Dodger. You're a legendary Dodger.
He was also the manager of the Giants.
So that's where I'm going with this. So Lisa's brother and Lisa's whole family are Dodger fans. So I just asked him, like, are you, because he's still a massive Dodger fan. I'm like, are you okay with this? And he's like, you know what? I think it starts with the fact that he was the manager of the Giants. I think that's where the fan base kind of shifted, because there's such a rivalry there. He said, and then I'm not going to sugarcoat it, there is still, because he's the manager of the Astros, through association, that's going to cause the fans to react a certain way. And he goes, I don't know that I agree with it, but I think that's your answer. And I said, I mean, the Giants part of it makes sense too, to tie into those two situations. So I get it, but I just don't.
I'm okay with everybody booing the Astros. At one, from, like, just take myself away from the City of Houston and Astro allegiance in general, you're going to boo the team that you hate.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter who's wearing the jersey. It's the same reason that Texas A&M fans will boo Texas. They don't care that it's Bijan Robinson that's their running back. They don't care the name of the back of the jersey. They care the name of the front of the jersey. So, like, the Dodger fans and Yankee fans and baseball as a whole are going to dislike the Houston Astros. I don't care if they played on the 2017 team. I don't care if they never played on the 2017 team. In fact, I find it kind of weird, Astro fans that get offended about teams booing players that weren't on the 2017 team. Like, there's people losing their – there's Astro fans losing their minds on Twitter that other fan bases would have the audacity to boo a Framber Valdez who never played on the 2017 Astros, that they have the audacity to boo Hunter Brown or Yiner Diaz in the Futures game. They're not booing Diaz. They're not booing Brown. They're not booing Framber. They're booing the Houston Astros as a whole. Yeah. So I don't – that's fine by me. I'm not going to tell anybody how to fan. If they want to hate the Astros, hate the Astros. I actually like it. I think it's entertaining. I think it's great. I also think it fires up the Houston Astros. I love the booing. I love wearing the dark hat in Major League Baseball. And you know what? If the Astros were 100-game losers, no one would care about the Houston Astros. The Houston Astros are the it team in Major League Baseball when it comes to universally hated across the board, and I love it. I'm totally okay with it.
No, I'm okay with it, too, because I think, as you put it, is exactly how everybody that's losing their mind about this should understand it. And that is, as a Packer fan, I'm always going to hate anything associated with the Bears or the Vikings indirectly, right? You mentioned it with A&M and Texas. If a rival is your rival and there's truly a rivalry there, it is all about the colors, the logos, and the name on the front. It has nothing to do with who was where in terms of the names on the back. It has everything to do with, you're associated with the team that I have had bad situations with that I don't care for, so therefore I hate you too. It's like the Bill O'Brien, only I hate you too, bro. I hate you too.
You suck too.
Yeah, that's exactly what it comes down to.
It's one of my favorite bites.
So, I mean, the only thing that I would say is, and it's hard to say it with a from a Dusty perspective and bring it back to like an Astros perspective because there isn't that. But if you had a guy on the 17 team that ended up going to manage the Mariners or the Rangers or the Yankees.
Alex Cora.
And came back. Or Alex Cora wasn't a player that won a World Series. I'm saying,
yeah.
You know, like if Berkman ever ends up.
What if Beltran's the next manager of the Yankees?
There's too much extra stuff with Beltran. I think if Berkman, who's a college baseball coach now at HBU, if he ever got to the major league level and started managing the Yankees and came back, it'd be interesting to see how Astros fans would react because I think that if it's still a rivalry, would you cheer him or boo him?
Yeah.
Because of the associations both ways.
See, the Astros have had former players that are big, that are managers. Brad Ausmus did it, yeah. But Ausmus was never really like a threat, yeah. Right? Scott Servais, like, but Scott Servais wasn't
very
popular.
People don't really remember him as an Astro.
He was a you know, journeyman catcher, mm-hmm. Started a few games, was majority a backup, you know, backstop. So, yeah, I would take a more popular name. I am curious about that as well, like how that would be viewed. But I'm totally okay with all the fans booing. And, like, I've never seen the booing affect the Astros in a negative way either. Mm-mm. Like, I've only seen the Astros feeding off of it. They've been to 5 straight ALCSs. They've been to 3 World Series and 2 since 2017. Now, 2019 was before the whole scandal broke loose. But then they got back to the World Series last year. I think that they feed off of it. I think that they love it. I think they have a lot of fun with it. Fromber was smirking, talked after the game how he just thinks it's funny. He doesn't lose any sleep over it. You had Alex Cintron, who is the Astros hitting coach, laughing and pointing to the city of Houston. Really, only Dusty Baker was like, oh, don't boo for my guys. But, like, I've never seen a single Houston Astro negatively affected by the vitriol sent their way sent their way.
Wait a minute now.
Okay.
I will say Altuve, right after the strike, the year that he had the down year, even Dusty said.
There weren't fans in the stands in 2020.
Well, from preseason, it got to him, and then all the media. And there was one guy that Dusty even admitted it got to him. And they also said he had some personal things going on with his family. I don't know if it was a death in the family or whatever. But, you know, it all kind of came to a head. But that he was so, like, comfortable with being the little guy that everybody pulled for and the likability that it really got to him. But I think that you've seen...
It wasn't from the booing, though, because there weren't
fans. No, I know there
weren't
fans in the stands at that point, right?
But the PR and the stories and all that.
But then as they started to get fans back in the stands again, it still was there.
But he's been good.
And I think part of it was he came to accept it. At first, he didn't want to accept it. But then when you saw in Fenway Park the same people that were booing families and kids, booing and yelling things at him, and he's like, hey, come down here, takes pictures, gives them his bat, does some things. It's like he's going to accept the role of the villain a little bit more, but also let you know, I'm not a bad dude. You can just hate me for whatever reasons you want to hate me for. But I do think the reason why he wasn't in the dugout last night and didn't go to the World Series, because it was a knee injury. He was hit by a ball. He could have.
Yeah. He played twice.
He just didn't want to. It's right. He just didn't want to deal with all the BS. And so that's fine with me because it's Dodger fans in LA. So I don't care if you're gonna boo him anyway. Don't be butthurt if he doesn't show.
No, you can't boo a guy and be upset that he doesn't show. Rex Ryan on our Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He said sports hate is what fuels the fun for being a fan. That's where I'm at. Like, everybody loves booing the team that they hate. Houston loves booing Dallas teams. Let's be completely honest with you. So, like, LA and the Dodgers, they're always going to be Houston. Even if you took away the sign stealing, I think they would boo Houston because they beat them in the World Series. The Yankees want to be the Houston Astros in the last 5 seasons. They were even cheating before the Houston Astros were. Right. They just didn't do it the right way. They didn't do it the best way. They didn't do it the most optimal way. Watching the All-Star game yesterday, if you want to weigh in on the Astros booing and how you feel about it, 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. What were your thoughts of watching the All-Star game? Obviously, Dusty filling out the lineup card managed the American League to a victory, so they get home field advantage in the... No, just kidding. But you get the victory there. Fromber Valdez got the win. 3 up, 3 down, 3 ground balls, too, for Fromber Valdez. Kyle Tucker, 0 for 2. And then also some other fun things that Fox was doing with the broadcast. What were some of the takeaways you had of the All-Star game?
They saved the game, Jeremy. They took an otherwise afterthought, boring experience of an All-Star game and they saved it for me. I think they saved it for a lot of people. I think the same way when they got the NFL contract and they got innovative with a lot of things,
yeah,
they started to get real creative last night, and it made a massive difference. Little things that, of course, Brendan will say I noticed, but like having the drone cameras to give you really cool aerial shots, to having the umpire camera, to having the mics is one thing to have a player mic'd up because we've seen ESPN do that and really get some good run out of it. But to have a pitcher and a catcher mic'd up, to have a pitcher mic'd up with John Smoltz to be and asking John Smoltz where I should throw pitches and how I should get this guy out was absolutely genius to me.
I like that a lot. I didn't love the Q&A like during the game, and we've seen that. We've seen Altuve mic'd up on like Sunday Night Baseball. Sunday Night Baseball does that sort of stuff. I loved hearing the pitcher be like, "Okay, here I'm gonna throw the heater in. I'm gonna throw the backdoor slider. I'm gonna throw the back foot slider," which ended up hitting the dude in the front foot. I like that part. You couldn't really do that outside of an exhibition, though, right? You're not sitting there calling out your pitches unless you're Zach Greinke in a real game, in a playoff game. One area where I feel like Fox and baseball can learn from this. Like, I love the sounds of the game. And maybe I'm just a purist here, and maybe it's because I love baseball that I love the sounds of the game. But wouldn't it be cool if you had, because Apple's tried this. Apple's tried like a half an inning of just the Nat sound. But how about putting a little mic on an umpire? Like, we love conflict. We love drama. We love entertainment. We love storylines. David Ross the other day was doing an in-game interview from the dugout. Ian Happ got called out on strikes. It was a borderline pitch. David Ross threw off his headset, ran onto the field, started arguing, and it went viral just because he threw off the headset and be like, that was low. How about we amp up the Nat sound and we get some good old arguments between manager and umpire? Or how about we mic up a pitcher and a catcher and we do like NBA where you go inside the huddle? That sort of stuff. I think they could take this and go further with it while also, like, you're not calling out your pitches in a playoff game. But I feel like there's something to be learned from there.
I think not only that, Jeremy, but when you're starting to try and avoid cheating scandals, and they're trying to do the whole catcher on the guard and the remote controls and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Tell you what, you mic them both up, and you can figure out a way to solve a lot of this, too. But I think that the interesting thing was, too, which people were, if you're concerned about what Jeremy just said, because I'm in total agreement, that if you really want to change the broadcast and change interest levels in baseball because it's not an over-the-top, exciting, fast-paced sport, this is the kind of thing that could do it and get more people involved in it. But the thing is it's also on a 7-second delay. So when you saw Nestor get, try and do his Louis
Tiant.
What's
his nickname again?
I'm not saying
it's
that.
It's escaping me.
But Nestor Cortez, when he.
That was awesome.
But did you catch what he did?
Yeah.
When he tried to do the Louis Tiant thing, he said, I effed that up. But he said it on delay, so the audio guy dropped out the audio.
No, I didn't catch that.
Yeah, and so you didn't catch it with the audio to hear it.
Yeah.
But he said it, and it was even better that he said it and said, I effed that up, but I was trying to do this or that. I thought it was absolutely genius. And I thought the other thing, to your point, I don't know whose mic was catching it, but at the start of the game, the home plate umpire, the ball boy brings out some of the baseballs, and he goes, what's your name? Okay, I just want to make sure I appreciate you. Or something. It's like, those are the kind of little things when you hate an umpire or you this or that. You catch that kind of stuff, you're like, that's really cool.
Amp up the Nat sound. It would be so good. Get the manager, umpire argument. Get the conversations, umpire catcher. Maybe even get Correa mic'd up for those mound visits. We would all love that. 713-780-ESPN, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. All right. Are All-Star games better in Major League Baseball when they mattered? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN97.5 and ESPN92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, tell you about Doc Linville. I've been telling everybody about Doc Linville because it's the only way to get your hair back. It's your hair, it's natural, and it's a fantastic process with a massive success rate. That's what I signed up for. That's why I'm glad I did it. You can be the next in line to do it, too. Go to 975hair.com. As an ESPN listener, you get a consultation with Doc Linville for free. It normally costs $150. Let him tell you about the NeoGraft procedure. Because essentially what it is it's taking your own hair where you're never going to lose it genetically, which is the sides and the back, and putting it where you need it. Maybe you need it on top and back, like a baboon's butt is starting to show out. Or maybe it's in front where your forehead has turned into an 8-head. It doesn't matter. They can help you, and they can solve it. It's not shaving it off or sprays and creams and foams to mask the problem. It's your own hair placed where you need it, and in a certain amount of time, 6 to 9 months normally, the hair takes, it grows, it gets thicker and stronger, and eventually your problem is solved. Your self-confidence goes way up. Your appearance is fantastic, and you feel great again when you look at yourself in the mirror. It's an unbelievable procedure. I had fantastic success with it. 95%+ success rate on every follicle moved. That's just another reason why this was the procedure for me. And it might be for you too. Check them out for free. Go to 975hair.com. Make that first appointment. Go see my friend, Doc Linville.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Keith Law is going to join us at 12:30. He covers Major League Baseball for The Athletic, of course, with the draft just finishing up yesterday. Got to get his thoughts on that. Also, the Astros pipeline, that's going to be something that's a topic of conversation over the next week or two. Our top 10 Texan storylines at the top of the 1 o'clock hour. And also, I got sick of ESPN. You got sick of CBS Sports. Brendan got sick of The Athletic putting out their top 10 quarterbacks. So we're going to have a Killer Bee top 10 quarterback. We'll get that started at 1:15. But Brendan's got some hot takes about the Major League Baseball All-Star Game. He's got two, in fact. He's got a pair of hot takes. And, well, Brendan, you can just go with whatever one you want to talk about first.
I know you guys love my hot takes.
Well, Brendan, welcome to the show. What do you got today?
The first one was... Everyone talks about how much all these All-Star games suck and they're not fun and they're boring and all that. And that's fine. But then I opened Twitter yesterday and it's the only thing I see people talking about on my Twitter. And if you enjoy the All-Star game, good for you. I got nothing negative to say.
Yeah.
But if you spent the last couple days talking about how boring or bad baseball's All-Star game is and spent your night watching it, I'm sorry. You're kind of a loser. If it's that bad, find something better to do with your time.
I don't disagree. Like, if you're going to sit there and bang on the All-Star game and bash the All-Star game, I don't even care what sport. If it's baseball, if it's basketball, if it's football, and then you're going to literally live tweet it for, like, the entire duration of the event being on, you got to reevaluate some things.
No, I agree with you. I mean, that's the thing. But I think that, you know what, that's kind of the crux of sports, too. We were talking about this, and I said I gave Brendan credit because people take sports so passionately that it morphs into a part of their life. So if you don't agree with their teams or their players, their favorites, their opinions, it's not where we can just wash our hands with it by saying we agree to disagree or, you know, or just have a discussion back and forth. It's like, I want to insult you in a way that it hurts because you've hurt me that badly saying those things about my player, my team. It's the same way with the broadcasts. Like, if you're going to crap all over it, then go watch Real Housewives. But don't crap all over it and then watch every single minute of it.
Joel, I don't personally find the All-Star game very entertaining. So you know what I did yesterday? Not watch the All-Star game. Like, I read some of the things. I did see the jerseys are kind of...
That's a big deal, too.
Yeah,
like, I don't like them.
There's some, like, storylines around it that I'm, like, curious to read about, but I'm not going to invest my night watching a game I find boring. Now, that kind of leads to the other one. The All-Star game was better when it mattered. I know people didn't like it.
What, the home field in the World Series?
I would go back to that immediately.
I think there's ways to do it right. If you're going to have the All-Star game, like okay, you're counting it for home field advantage in the World Series. First off, you probably shouldn't have the previous World Series managers managing the team. It should probably be the best record entering the All-Star break because they have more at stake. Like, you can go from being the World Series champion the year before or the representative out of each league and then be a mediocre team the following year and not really have that much at stake. Secondly, you would have to get rid of these little, like, legendary All-Star appearances. Like, oh, let's make Albert Pujols feel good. Oh, let's let Miguel Cabrera feel good. You got to eliminate all of that stuff. But I view the All-Star game as an exhibition. I really don't want it to count for anything.
I don't either, because the other thing I was thinking about was the only way you could solve that is late in the game, you'd have to have a re-entry rule where you can only take players from the top two or three teams in each league and let them duke it out so that you can see. I just don't think – look, we know how much has been scrutinized with all the All-Star games across the board. There's making something mean something in one of those All-Star games – as it translates to the postseason and the biggest and most important time of the year, I think it's a ludicrous idea just because of the fact that there's no fair way to do that and get the teams that are going to be involved in the World Series to be able to impact it.
See, I'm guilty of this too, but sometimes I think we forget that sports are entertainment.
Sure.
Like, I don't need things to be fair down to the perfect, like, smallest amount. If I can feel invested in this, like, there's nothing in sports where you get to watch what an All-Star game originated as, right? Where you get to watch the best in sports come together and play at the highest level, and it matters, and people care. It matters in the sense that, like, it's just this cool event that people care about. Like, that's just not what All-Star games are anymore.
It should be a celebration of the best players in the game.
And I think by putting something on the line that I don't think is ultimately that big of a deal in a 7-game series, 1 home game more, it matters, but I don't think it's going to make or break your team winning a World Series.
Ooh, it could.
I think it's worth it.
It could, especially if you got a really good home field. It can make a difference. I think that essentially what you're saying, especially because it's the only one of the All-Star games that when it happens, right when it happens, it's like in the heat of your season, right? So when you look at that, sure, it happens in the NBA, but it's a clean break, and we know what the NBA All-Star game is too. But I don't think it should impact, because really essentially what it is, it's a participation trophy or a reward for saying you had the best little bit over first half of a season for this year. So it's like to put something on your mantle that says, I was an All-Star in 2022. That's what it amounts to. It's impossible to say that there's some way that you should make it mean more by having it impact the playoffs, by doing something like that. I think that's a reach and a stretch. And I think that one of the things they did last night to solve the ties, which was also a big issue with Bud Selig the year that it was tied, the way he handled it, was people were hoping for a tie last night just to see this home run derby, to have it beat. And I'm sure people would have crapped on it after it happened if their team lost or something happened. But there's just no way you're going to get that. It's an imperfect science.
It's a reach and a stretch if your goal is to make the baseball season as fair as possible. That is not my goal. My goal is to take this moment and make it something that doesn't exist anywhere in sports. Baseball is the only one that had it. They had a moment where the best players in their league all came together for something that mattered. And I think that's an entertainment level that isn't achieved in other sports.
95%, though, of the people that are playing in the game do not have any interest of it affecting the home foot advantage. So now you're putting a lot at
95%?
Stake.
95%?
Yeah, I would say about 95%.
You think 95% of the players in the All-Star game don't have a chance of making the playoffs?
Maybe 95% is high. Let's go like 70%.
I think it's still a little high. But
well,
I
you also
have
a representative for literally every single team in the league. So you got Tiger representatives.
Yeah,
you have national representatives, although Soto's not bad.
And to be fair, I would eliminate that.
Oakland is a representative. You can't. Because of entertainment, like, I understand that it's entertainment. I usually love the entertainment of the game. That's why let's mic up umpire manager arguments. That would be fascinating. People would love that. But you're not taking away from the integrity of the game. You can't take away from the integrity of the game,
yes,
especially for the piece of metal that you're trying to contend for at the end of the season. Because
easy, Rob Banford.
I don't think it actually brings more eyeballs to the game. Like, I don't think it helps ratings enough. Like, what is it doing in terms of the, you know, the who's watching it, the viewership numbers? I don't think it impacts it whatsoever. And there's some good points on the Twitch, too, like Infuentes saying, imagine an 86-win wildcard team having home field over a 108-win
one more
seed.
Home game.
That's valuable. One
yes,
home game
matters.
Over seven
Brendan,
games
it,
in a series is a huge
it,
deal.
It matters a ton. It could, and you don't know when it's going to matter. It could matter early in the series. It could matter because you're batting last and you have a chance. Or it could matter in a game seven. But you don't work your ass off the entire season of 162 games to get punished by the results of some exhibition in July.
We're too serious about this when we're talking
just
about
being honest about
no,
it.
No,
hold
I mean,
on. You can't say we're being too serious about it, but now you want to add stakes that which
no,
increases
no, no.
The, like, the serious nature of the game.
Is we are too serious about the impact of one home game. Like, if your team's good enough to win the World Series, go do it either way. Give me this one moment. I'm just asking for one moment, baseball. Your season is so damn long. You play every day for months. Just give me this one awesome moment in the middle of the season.
See, I think that the only way that you can ramp up the level of competition another notch is to make it so financially impactful to a player that, like, the same way the home run derby, where Rodriguez could make as much money as he made all year, or is going to make all year if he won the home run derby.
Yeah, well, he got more finishing in second.
Yeah,
750 against 700.
So the player could that's something that's always going to motivate the players in the game if they know that they can cash in and they can get a really hefty payday. But that's on the leagues too, because they're always so bottom line driven about how many sponsors and that. Look, let's be real honest. The whole reason why these uniforms, which were being hotly debated on Twitter last night, are a thing is because Nike and the league are making a boatload of cash off the sales of the All-Star jerseys. That's it.
Yeah. Which I get. I mean, it all comes down business. To the bottom line. 713-780-ESPN, not Santa on Twitter, saying you have permission to take that bat. I hold the bat in my right hand and whack Brendan Riley over the head.
You
for
do
that
not.
Trash take. Not Santa says we can. Coming up next, Keith Law covers Major League Baseball, specifically prospects in the Major League Baseball draft. Covers it for The Athletic. We'll discuss the Major League Baseball draft. We'll discuss how the Astros fared in said draft. And also want to ask him about how other teams around baseball are viewing the Houston Astros minor league org. Keith Law, it's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, tell you about New Brakes. Look, I've been talking about New Brakes for quite a while. You guys have caught on. You've hit me up and said, who's the brake company you speak for? And then once they tried New Brakes, they couldn't stop telling other people too, because it's the only way you should get your brakes done anymore, simply because they come to you to do what they do. It saves you time, which is saving you money. And that's the most important thing in today's culture with everything going on, family, work, the gym, all the different things you're trying to accomplish in a day. You don't need to spend 2 or 3 hours in the waiting room of a brake shop getting your brakes done. That's why they come to you to do what they do. And if you're an ESPN 97.5 listener and you mention us, you're going to save 10%. But more so than anything else, you're going to save time, which is saving you money. You go to NUBrakes, that's newbrakes.com, and you schedule an appointment. You find out that not only do they come to you to do what they do, but they'll go to your job or they'll go to your work. And here's the bullet points that mean the most to you. They use the same brake parts as any brake shop in town. They have the same competitive prices with all the brake shops in town. The bigger thing is they have trained, certified technicians that only do brakes. They don't do other things. They're not going to try and upsell you and tell you what else is going on your car that you should probably replace while they're working on it. They're just going to do brakes. They're going to do it better than anybody else, and they're going to do it in a very, very time-efficient manner so that while you're doing other things, in and out in 40 minutes, your brakes are done, and you don't have to worry about it. It's fantastic. Check them out today. It's newbrakes.com. That's NUBrakes.com.
ESPN 97.5. Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Keith Law joining us on the HRNP guest line, covers Major League Baseball for The Athletic. Keith, is it fair to say the Major League Baseball draft is the most exciting part of the season in your perspective?
No. I like the draft.
Go ahead.
It's kind of exhausting.
Yeah.
Also,
even though they shrunk it to 20 rounds, huh? Still takes a lot of time, doesn't it?
Well, you know, it's after the 10th round. It's mostly college seniors, tough sign guys. We have some of the drafts and follows again, but yeah, it's the 90% of my work before and after the draft revolves around the top 5 or 6 rounds. So it's not so much that, it's a lot of names. It's a lot of guys to keep track of over the course of a pretty short season. And it all happens at once, right? The minor league stuff I do is constantly spread out over longer periods of time. But the draft, everything culminates in this singularity of the actual draft, which is just over, less than 48 hours. We get the whole thing finished, and then it's, on to the next year.
Yeah, it's taxing. Reading up on some of your work over the last few days, doing a good job covering it. Read what you wrote about Drew Gilbert, the Astros' first-round pick out of Tennessee, their cleanup hitter, the best college baseball team in the country. Jacob Melton, the Pac-12 Player of the Year, drafted in the second round. And then it seemed like a lot of big strike-throwing pitchers for the Astros from rounds 3 through 7, 8, whatever. How'd you think the Astros fared in their first 5, 7, 10 rounds?
I think it's fun. I think it's a good approach. Obviously, drafting, first of all, it's new for them, right, for this new regime to have all their picks back again. And I liked what they did especially with the first two picks, because even though they went college, and that's not a shock. I mean, James Click is not one of those guys who's only going to take college players, but I think there's more of a preference in that direction. Also, they have a new scouting staff. He finally got the chance to staff back up on the amateur side, and I think it's a little easier with a newer staff where you're still trying to implement a single philosophy across the entire, across all of those scouts, to lean a little heavily towards the college side. But with Gilbert and Melton, I think there's upside there for both of those guys. Gilbert definitely stays up the middle. He can really hit. there could be some more power there if they work with him on his swing a little bit and he fills out more. And Jacob Melton is pretty toolsy also for a college player. Again, a guy I think where there's some risk. I mean, obviously, he wouldn't be available in the second round if I thought he didn't have that. But there's star upside. If you're Houston, you are not looking for guys who'll just get to the big leagues, right? You want guys who will either potentially be above average or better regulars, or who will have trade value. And I think they managed to do that across the board with the first five or six picks.
Take the first two picks, Keith, because there's been so many different comps, and maybe just give the listeners your idea of comps for each player as it relates to so that they get a better grasp of who these players could possibly be.
So Gilbert, like I was saying, he is a true center fielder. I actually saw him in high school as a pitcher as well. He's got a great arm, as you'd expect, and he can really play center. He can run, but he also just has really good instincts. He plays center field like a guy who's going to do so in the big leagues. I mean, they just look different when the reads and the instincts are already there. He's on the smaller side. He's only 5'9", but I do think he's going to get stronger. I like the swing. It's kind of doubles power right now, but if he ended up a 15 to 20 homer guy, I wouldn't be surprised. And between that, his feel for the strike zone and what he's going to provide on defense, that could very easily be an above average regular. Melton played a lot of center for Oregon State. There's a mixed bag on whether he stays there, but he's definitely going to go out as a center fielder for sure. And what I really like about him is it's a power speed guy. He's a really good athlete. I think he's got a chance to get to 20 plus homers. He made a swing change. If you remember, Darwin Barney played a little bit for the Cubs. He was the coach at Oregon State, worked with Melton actually to just get him to stay back on the ball. He said, "You're a strong kid. Let's get you driving the ball more." He stayed back and became a much better power hitter over the last two seasons. And I wrote in my draft recap, 20 homers, 20 steals. That's the kind of player he could be. If he does that, stays in center, even if there is a little bit of swing and miss, I think that's guy with a chance to be an above average regular.
We had heard Melton and Benintendi. We had heard Gilbert and Brent Gardner. And I was like, I don't like the Brent Gardner comp. But if you got another Benintendi type guy, I don't think you're doing too badly.
Yeah, that's a terrible. I mean, I don't like comps.
Thank
you. And I mean, you gave the perfect. Honestly, you gave the perfect reason. Drew Gilbert is nothing like Brett Gardner. Like, that's a really bad.
I hated
it. Kind of lazy because they're why? Because they're left-handed and short. They're nothing like each other.
Good.
It's like when every Stanford right-hander is like Mike Mussina. Really? Because Mike Mussina is in the Hall of Fame.
Well, here in Houston, the fans are hoping that every Stanford quarterback's like Andrew Luck. So Keith Law joining us on the HRMP guest line, covers Major League Baseball for The Athletic. Of course, Major League Baseball trade deadline, first time it's in August, August 2nd with the new CBA trying to control a certain day of the week. How do teams around Major League Baseball, because James Click saying that he's going to be aggressive, they're going to try to help this team and help their odds of winning a World Series. How do other teams around Major League Baseball view the Astros minor league system, and how aggressive can they be? How good of a player can they try to get before the deadline?
Well, I mean, I can tell you, probably better tell you how I view their minor league system, which is that it's weak. It has been weak for a while now. The loss of, obviously, they traded a lot of players, promoted some players, right? Traded a lot of players in a couple of very significant moves to win the World Championship, to get back to the World Series. So I do understand it. But then between really just not drafting that well towards the end of the Jeff Luhnow years, losing a bunch of draft picks, picking later in the round anyway, I think has really set them back pretty substantially. And it leaves them in a position where there isn't a lot there to go make an impact move, right? If they were going to try to go get a Brian Reynolds, let alone a Juan Soto, God only knows what that market's going to look like. But they'd have a hard time, I think. I mean, their best prospects coming into the year were Corey Lee, who you've gotten a brief look at. I don't think he's a star. He might be a regular. And Jeremy Pena, who I do like quite a bit, but also they're probably not willing to trade him. I'm not sure I'd be willing to trade him at this point unless it was to get his replacement. So if the Astros are going to make a trade at the deadline, it will probably be for something smaller, a more marginal piece, because that's what they could get with their prospects, or money. They could potentially just take on a contract from somewhere and say, we'll just take the rest of the money and give you less in return in prospects from our system.
Okay, with that being said, Keith, because I love your expertise on this, then of the players that we know of that have some value, I'm curious how much value you put on Hunter Brown, and you know, everybody says, should he be up this year? Is it okay to make him a relief pitcher if he's a starting pitcher? Then we hear, you know, Diaz might have been the biggest steal in the Indians trade that they made a year ago, and this is a guy that other teams are going to look at favorably. And then, of course, the name that continues to be on everybody's lips is Leon. Trying to figure out where he plays is a big deal, too. But I'm curious your thoughts on those three in particular.
Yeah, I just saw actually two of those guys were in the Futures game.
Yep.
Hunter Brown's a reliever. He just is. I don't see any chance that guy's going to have enough command to be able to start. I like him for what he is. It's a great arm. But the way that his arm works and where he is, given his age as well, and where the command is, it's probably just not happening. At this point, yeah, I would say it's more than time to say, this is what you are. You are going to be a reliever, and we're going to put you in that role. Leon, I love the athleticism. And I do think you could probably just stick him in center and just call it a day. I know they've played with him in the infield, and I saw him a little bit at short in fall league. I mean, he was erratic. He could make some really tough plays, and then he would struggle with the routine ones, which is not surprising for a guy without experience at the position. But he's not hitting. That's the biggest problem. He's just not hitting enough. It doesn't matter if he plays center or if he plays second. He's got to produce a lot more at the plate. He's crazy speed. He's actually got quite a bit of power. But he's got to make more contact. And if you're not doing that well in AAA, guess what? It's quite a bit harder when you get to the majors. So I still like him. I still think he's one of their six or seven best prospects. But if you're thinking in terms of trade value, yeah, I think it's pretty limited. Yennier Diaz is probably a solid everyday guy, and I don't think a whole lot more than that. He's not a great defensive catcher, but also teams don't care as much about catcher defense at this point, especially if we're getting the automated strike zone. There's a lot of teams that are sort of throwing up their hands and saying, can you hit, and can you just physically handle the position? He may be better cast as sort of a multi-position guy, a guy who catches part-time, plays a couple other positions for you, but has a little bit of thump to maybe be able to justify playing him occasionally at first base or at DH.
It feels almost, Keith, with Diaz, that it kind of depends on what position he is. Like, he's a pretty good catching prospect, but if he plays first base, maybe more mediocre. And you mentioned the defense. The Astros, it seems like they're one of the teams that still value defense where a lot of teams maybe don't.
I think that's accurate. And one of the things they've always liked about Corey Lee, and he crosses over regimes too, is they think he's a really good catcher. And based on what I've said, I've seen Corey Lee a couple times over the years, I think that's true. I think he is a definite catcher who you hope is going to just produce enough that'll make him a solid regular. I mean, Corey Lee he's a big leaguer. He's probably a long-time big leaguer. But I feel very strongly he's going to stay behind the plate. I don't feel that way about Yainer Diaz. And, I mean, that's probably why he was available in the first place, where he's more of a, maybe he can catch, but he also hits enough that he's got to, you know, if he's got to play 30 games for you at first or DH, that's fine too.
Keith, great stuff as always. Really appreciate you taking a few minutes on a very busy week. Get some rest. Hope you recover.
Thanks, guys. My pleasure.
You got it. It's Keith Law, covers Major League Baseball, the MLB draft for The Athletic. Hunter Brown is a reliever. We'll discuss next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, tell you about Fitz Roofing. I've been telling you about them for quite a while because Fitz Roofing is the only place you should go if you need anything done around your house. But specifically, obviously, it starts with your roof. If you got a leaky roof, you want to put a new roof on your house, your business, your commercial project, don't go any further than Fitz Roofing because they have everything you need. They have the best ratings in the business. They use the best product in the business, starting with CertainTeed shingles. And they have the best warranties in the business, and their customer service is second to none. The fact is they're so confident in the work that they do free, no-obligation inspections, where other companies normally charge you a service fee just to come out to your house to tell you what they could do, and then try and roll it into getting you to overcommit to them doing the work and them charging a whole lot more. That's not how they do it at Fitz Roofing. Free, no-obligation inspection, all you got to do is call them. 832-521-3001. They come to you, tell you what they can do, and go on with the rest of their day. You want them to come back, you book the appointment. Before, during, and after the process is done, they're going to take care of you every single step of the way. Corey is not only the owner of the company, he is the vice president of the Houston Roofing Association. You don't get honored by your peers and respected by your peers like that if you don't know what you're doing, and if you don't know if the other people don't know they can trust you. He knows what he's doing, and it rolls over to how he treats his customers. Check him out today. See all the services they offer, from home repairs, putting a fence in your yard, and all the different ways they can help your roof. FITZRoofing.com. Get that free no obligation inspection. 832-521-3001. Fitz Roofing, making a difference one home at a time.
Razor sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the killer bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Keith Law just joined us. He said Hunter Brown, who many people in this city, we love Hunter Brown, right? He's the top prospect for the Astros. He is their best trade piece. Maybe they don't want to trade him because they have long-term plans for Hunter Brown. Says he's a reliever. Says he doesn't have enough command to be a starting pitcher for the just
who
in the big
saw that
series.
Coming?
He said it to us before.
He hinted that you could put him in the pen, but to say it that like matter-of-factly, after all we've heard and what we've been talking about is, and especially me personally saying, I wouldn't throw him into the pen where he really has zero experience if you know he's going to be a starter next season. And then to have him just that matter-of-factly come out with that, I was like, whoa, I didn't see that one coming.
His walks per nine, to get very nerdy, is pretty high. I mean, he walks four hitters per nine innings. If you look at the Astros right now, just in their rotation, and look, translating from AAA to Major League Baseball, I wouldn't say it's going to improve, right? Like, if he's walking four guys per nine innings, it's probably not going to get better in the big leagues. It's probably not going to be a three in the big leagues. So let's just assume he's a four walk per nine inning guy. Framber Valdez, who we talk about quite a bit, is having some command issues. He's improved, but has some command issues. He's less than 3.5. Justin Verlander is one of the best pitchers in the big leagues. He's just more than 1.5. Jose Urquidy, who has tremendous command, he's less than 2 per 9. Luis Garcia, who can have some command issues, is only at 2.5. Christian Javier, who has some command issues, is less than 3.5. And Jake Odorizzi is at 2.5. So if you take Hunter Brown this season, where he's been better, like his career walks per 9 in the minors in his three seasons is over 4.5. This year it's been 4. So he's gotten better with his command, but 4 is still a pretty high rate when you're comparing it with the current Houston Astro rotation. It would literally be the worst by more than half a walk per nine innings.
Yeah, I mean, I just think from the standpoint, I think that was a shock to a lot of Astros fans that were if they were listening because of the fact that their expectations are so much higher and they're not delving that deeply into the numbers like you just did and thinking about the fact that that could be instrumental in deciding where he ultimately fits for this franchise. So that could change your whole way of thinking in a lot of ways if you're sitting there trying to play armchair general manager and figure out your rotation for next season. And I still believe, and you can correct me if you feel differently, I still think that James Click thinks that he's a starter for this team starting next season.
He's flat out said it.
Yeah.
He's flat out said it.
So you think that something like that, as much as he's analytical, you think those numbers are going to change his mind?
See, Keith Law is a very number-centric guy.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, we remember he was saying that Yuli Gurriel, based on the numbers, isn't very good defensively, although the popular opinion is that he's very good defensively. Look, Keith Law is right. Hunter Brown's walk numbers are pretty high. There's only two Astros on this current big league team, pitchers, that are on this current big league team that have a higher walk per nine ratio than Hunter Brown currently does in Sugarland. It is Ryan Stanek, who's just over 5. Now, he's a very quality reliever, right? He has almost a half ERA, an all-star level reliever. And then the second one's Brian Abreu, who's just under 4.5. And so those are the two guys that have a higher walk per nine than Hunter Brown. Here's whatever if Hunter Brown's with this team, the value of a pitcher is to be a starting pitcher. So I agree with you. James Click's aware of this. Like, Keith Law is not better with numbers than James Click is. But James Click's going to, as long as he has him on in this organization, is going to keep him as a starting pitcher, unless it's like, you know, he's trying to add an arm to the back end of the bullpen in 2022. Not even the back end, just the bullpen.
Yeah.
Because it's an upgrade over whoever you can, you know, Martinez and Abreu, whatever. But I'm curious, after hearing Keith Law say that and then kind of digging in deep to those numbers during the commercial, I wonder if he's more likely to be a trade candidate ahead of the August 2nd trade deadline than anybody in Houston thinks.
That crossed my mind, too, because there's still hype around him. He just played in the Futures game. So I think a lot of teams still think highly of him, to where maybe that does alter James Click's thinking in that, if, you know, regardless, I'm sure he's thinking not every team thinks like Keith Law. And if you know you get a kid out of the Futures game that an organization might fancy as a starting pitcher, you might be more apt to get rid of him than you would to keep him around, because you ultimately see him like Keith does and think he's going to be a relief pitcher, and you can get someone for this season that could have an impact in the short term that means more to you regardless of what you do starting next season.
Now, he's been really good in AAA. There's a reason he's appeared in the Futures game. His numbers have been fascinating, and you would love to see his work with Murphy and Miller, because Framber Valdez used to be a very high walk-per-nine guy, and look what Framber Valdez is now.
Well, he got a sports psychologist,
yeah. Yeah, but I mean, things you can improve.
Sure.
You can improve in those areas. And Hunter Brown has the arm talent that's worth seeing if you can improve in that area. And look, I still think he can be a solid starting pitcher even with four walks per nine innings.
Mm-hmm.
Framber Valdez has done it for a very long time. Well, now, his command has gotten better.
I talked to Creighton, you know, and Creighton's called a good amount of Hunter Brown games. And he said, look, we had him on the air on this show. And he talked about the fact that he's got really, really good stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And so if he's got really, really good stuff, you can fix a lot of things as long as you've got the arm talent that God gave you that you can't go out and try and develop to the level that he has, right? You know, it's the same thing you say. If you've got a 7-footer with a 12-foot reach and wingspan, you can teach him a whole lot of things. But if you've got a guy that's 6'5 trying to play the same position, you can teach till you're blue in the face. There's only so much you're going to get out of him. I think that's the same thing you look at with Hunter Brown and say whether you go the sports psychologist route, which absolutely worked for Framber because it was between Framber's ears.
Yeah. I mean, everybody's built different. Like, we don't know if that's Hunter Brown's command issues.
But I'm saying it's fixable in a lot of situations. There's also situations that unfortunately pop up, like a Josh James, like they're trying to work through with Brian Abreu, where you can have all the tools in the world. It's just how you can kind of hone your skill and your craft to go from throwing to pitching. That's a big transition for a lot of guys. I still see him as a starter in this organization.
You're not going to make him a reliever until you've exhausted every other option. It just makes absolutely no sense. And I think you can live with a 4 walk per 9. Framber last year had a 3.9. So, like, you can overcome it if you have really good stuff. And one of the positives with Hunter Brown is that he is improving with the command. But we'll see. Whenever I heard Keith Law say that, I was like, yeah, maybe he's more of a trade candidate than we think. One of the other things that we asked Keith about was the Astros minor league system. The August 2nd trade deadline's right around the corner. If you took a poll in this city and took a poll of Houston Astro fans, 95% of them would want the Astros to make a trade prior to the August 2nd trade deadline. Keith Law gave us a dose of realism there. He says the Astros cannot make an impact move with the minor league system that they have. And, like, Juan Soto, obviously, is probably the biggest name on the trade market. He's been the most popular, talked-about name on the market. He completely scoffed at the idea of Juan Soto to the Houston Astros.
Okay, but let me also throw this monkey wrench or caveat into that discussion. He's just relating the trade to get an impact player to the minor league system. What he has to also factor in is the fact that you have got a surplus of starting pitchers.
He brought up Pena. He brought up some of the young starters.
But I'm talking about pitching, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because so, everybody's looking for pitching. So you can fortify a trade with some of the guys on your actual major league roster if, in fact, your farm system isn't as good as other teams. I think a ton of teams would like the fact that they don't have to wait to get a pitcher that they could immediately insert in their starting rotation that has more experience.
It depends on the team, because some people do want to wait.
Absolutely, yeah. It does. But I'm saying most teams making trades are looking for younger pitchers that are going to be able to be not just plug and play. A lot of times maybe it's a year or two development. But if you get a guy in the trade that's more major league ready than the rest of the guys that came in the trade, you're probably more excited because you can see more in the short term in terms of return on your investment, and you still have him locked up for several years where he can be in your long-term future plans. And that's where you start looking at some of the guys that they have on their roster. And everybody, I think, would look at Christian Javier that way, Garcia that way, though I don't know that either guy would be available. And I think Urquidy's a little bit more in terms of, because of his medical history and his age, I don't know that they would be as likely to throw him in and be excited about him.
No.
But you do have some guys on your roster that can entice other teams.
Yeah, I love Urquidy as like a number four. I don't think he's going to be a sexy return. John Heyman, who covers Major League Baseball, we talk to him from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
He reported what the Nationals will be looking for in a trade for Juan Soto. A team's top four prospects, young major leaguers, and then a willingness to take on Patrick Corbin's contract. So I went item by item just to what a trade would look like for the Astros to just get in the mix and just to, like, the Nationals GM to take the phone call. You're looking at Christian Javier, Luis Garcia. Those are the two. Let's just say those are the two young major leaguers, because I think those are the two pitchers that would have the most value that are currently on the major league team. Then you're looking at the top four prospects of Hunter Brown, Yiner Diaz, Pedro Leon, and Corey Lee. For Juan Soto, and then Patrick Corbin, by the way, his contract, he's a 33-year-old starting pitcher with a 5.87 ERA, by the way, makes $23 million this year, $24 million next year, and then $35 million in 2024. Would you trade Javier Garcia,
this year?
Brown, Yiner, Leon, Corey Lee for Juan Soto and Patrick Corbin?
Is Corbin any good anymore?
No, I just told you. He had a 5.87 ERA. He's 33 years old.
I think it's too much. I think for all that we've talked about in terms of the core three that could be obviously developed into more offensively and that pitching staff that you have under team control for the foreseeable future, I think for all the positives built around that and centered around discussions we've had about why they can maintain – their success rate for several years to come, I think you could thwart a whole bunch of that by making that trade right now.
Yep. Javier Garcia, Brown, Diaz, Leon, and Lee for Soto and Corbin. What do you say, Houston? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. The Houston Texans training camp opens in 9 days. We continue our top 10 storylines entering the 2022 season next. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports.